Happy Friday, everybody. I get a lot of phone calls and requests, and I, instead of giving one or two or three guys who had a meeting at a PBA meeting yesterday, they had a conversation regarding hand-to-hand drug transactions, what you can do. And I've been posed this question quite a bit, so it's time to do a video on one. I don't know if I've done one before, but for the guys who are and girls who are in this group and not from this area or the state of New Jersey, I am reciting New Jersey case law. However, we are a very liberal state, so I have to imagine that where you are, more than likely, it's going to fall right in line. You might even have more than we have or the ability to do more than we can. There's not many things in New Jersey that we can do that you can't outside of making an arrest for the odor of marijuana, which some states you can, but most states you can't. That develops PC in New Jersey. But outside of that, it's probably going to be similar. I would implore you to take the time to try to find the case law in your state. Unfortunately, there's 50 states in the union, and I cannot spend 4 years looking through 700,000 pieces of case law to give you exactly what you want in your state. However, the two-day program that I take and travel throughout the country with and do programs, it is very, very minimally infused with case law. And any case law that's left in there, we discuss it in class and try to come up with answers to what your state says regarding the same thing that we have here. And then I show you how to employ that in the field and use it correctly to your advantage. Anybody who's in this group or watching this video who's from a different state, my advice to you is this. If you know something about your state, there are a lot of people from your state involved in this group. We have over 11,000 members now. Comment on this video and say, hey, in Arkansas, we can do this too. This falls right in line with things in Alaska, which I have to imagine it does. Now, for the New Jersey people, I'm going to read a few pieces of case law for you, and I'm going to first break it down and give you a quick nutshell explanation of hand-to-hand drug transactions. So then I'm going to read the cases to you so you can understand it. Basically, police officer has to have training experience. There's a totality of the circumstances that comes into effect. But ideally, what you're going to have is somebody who has had previous experience with identifying and training in hand-to-hand drug transactions, and they observed one individual passing a small, even unknown object. You don't have to verify what it is in exchange for money. I'm going to bring up three cases, and we're going to talk about them a little bit. So I'm going to read some of the circumstances surrounding those cases. Oh, and then when you see that transaction happen, that establishes probable cause for arrest. It's not reasonable suspicion to stop and make an investigative detention. It literally develops probable cause for arrest if you are fitting into the right mold of what you need to establish an actual legitimate hand-to-hand drug transaction. So let's see. State versus Moore is one that comes out in 2004. I'm going to read the circumstances of the case to you right here on all my notes. I've been spitting for about 30 minutes, going through everything, making my highlights so I can give you guys the bits and pieces that are most important. And you could take this and apply it to in the field, especially for the people in the high crime areas. I'm sure if you're out in the woods somewhere, you're not going to see hand-to-hand drug transactions going on. But we have a lot of officers in this group from very, very urban areas, Patterson, Camden, Newark, very tough areas to work, Trenton. I hope not leave anybody out that works in a war zone, Irvington, that will see this stuff go on all the time. And now you'll know what you're able to do. All right. So here's what it says. Let's see. On June 6, 2000, approximately 5:45 p.m., Detective Abrams and three other detectives working undercover were patrolling in an unmarked car near the area of North Carolina Mansion and Arctic Avenues of Atlantic City, New Jersey. Detective Abrams described the locality as a high-crime area. The detective observed a group of six people congregating in a vacant lot between Piggy's Bar and a delicatessen. The detectives parked three-quarters of a block away and conducted surveillance using binoculars, which is an accepted form of surveillance, even for the in-presence requirement, just a quick side note. Detective Abrams observed a man wearing a floppy hat leave the group and walk towards the rear of the delicatessen. Defendant and another man left the group. When I say defendant, they're referring to Mr. Gregory C. Moore. Defendant and another man left the group and joined the man in a floppy hat. Defendant and his companion handed currency to the man, and each received from him a small item in return, which they both immediately pocketed before returning to the group. Believing he had just witnessed a drug transaction, Detective Abrams promptly drove his vehicle towards the group. When detectives arrived, defendant placed his hand in his right pocket and began to walk away. Detective Abrams exited the car and approached the defendant to arrest him. The detective informed the defendant that he observed him participating in a drug transaction and grabbed the defendant's right arm. Defendant removed his hand from the pocket to reveal two clear bags of a white powdery substance that was later identified as cocaine. Another detective recovered a similar bag of cocaine from a defendant's companion. The detectives were unable to locate the third man, who they believed had sold the drugs to the defendant and his companion. So even though they couldn't find the dealer and corroborate the whole story, this is what the court said. We now turn to apply to those principles in the present case. Detective Abrams was an experienced narcotics officer. He previously made numerous drug arrests in the same neighborhood, which was known to the police for heavy drug trafficking. Using binoculars, he observed three men move away from the group to the back of a vacant lot. And he saw the defendant and his companion give money to the third person in exchange for small unknown objects. Based on his experience and those facts, it was reasonable for Detective Abrams to conclude that the totality of the circumstances supported a well-grounded suspicion that he had witnessed a drug transaction. Therefore, the trial court properly determined that there was probable cause for Detective Abrams to arrest the defendant. Because we conclude there was probable cause to arrest the defendant, we need not address the defendant's argument that the facts did not support investigative detention. So what happened is the guy starts to say, well, it's an investigative detention. You don't have the right to search me. And the court said, no, it's not investigative detention. It's probable cause to arrest you. This search was incident to arrest, homeboy. All right. We hold that the observations by the law enforcement officers in the high crime area supported probable cause to arrest the defendant, search him, and seize the suspected drugs incident to that arrest. There it is. Behind a delicatessen, a man handed one small unidentified item to the defendant and another small unidentified item to another individual, both of whom gave currency in exchange. This event occurred in the so-called high crime area. Based on those observations, the police claimed that there was probable cause to arrest two men for involvement in drug transactions. So that's cool. That's State versus Moore. That's the first one. That's 2004. I will obviously, like I do before, I'll put wording up there. You'll be able to search it in the group if you lose track of this video. And I will attach a hyperlink so you can read it. This one I have on my website. You can read the circumstances right as I'm reading it from here. Here's my other one. I don't want to get to this one yet. This is the other one. This is State New Jersey versus Pagan. This is in June 30th, 2005, out of Perth Amboy. And here's what happened. Sergeant Conaway, an experienced narcotics officer with the Perth Amboy Police Department, is patrolling in a known high narcotics area Perth Amboy, January 7, 2003, at approximately 1 p.m. in an unmarked patrol vehicle. While on the other corner of the State Street and DeKalb Avenue, which I know because I grew up in Woodbridge, I know that area very well. So the Perth Amboy guys, man, we bought all our underage alcohol in Perth Amboy. Appreciate you guys when we got caught not taking us in, just dumping the bottles or taking them home for you to drink them on Saturday. But yeah. We spent a lot of time Perth. Well, the white boys from Woodbridge came to Perth and would buy our alcohol. Anyway, we went to Pops. We used to get stuff from Pops. That's like 20 years. I think Pops is dead, so it doesn't matter. I'm not ratting him out. But anyway, if we had one Spanish friend who could speak Spanish, you could go to any liquor store in Perth Amboy and they'd sell you liquor. This is 20 years ago. I don't know. Things probably have changed, or maybe they haven't. But a little quick side note about what I was like as a kid. All right. So anyway. While the corner near State Street and DeKalb Avenue, he observed Pagan, who he recognized after patrolling that neighborhood for almost 12 years. Conway observed Pagan conversing with the co-defendant, Vasquez, and then saw Vasquez hand Pagan what appeared to be paper currency in exchange for a small unknown object, which Pagan took from his pocket and handed to Vasquez. Conway saw Vasquez inspect the object and place it in his right hand jacket pocket before walking away from Pagan. The officer followed Vasquez to a dead-end area of Division Street and approached him on foot. When Conway tapped Vasquez on the shoulder, he turned around and removed his right hand from his jacket pocket, which allowed Conway to see the two balloons in his hand in the pocket, each tied off in a knot, one green and one white. Based on his training experience, Conway knew that heroin was often stored and sold in such a manner because it was made easier to swallow and destroy the drugs before the police could get them. Conway removed the objects from Vasquez's pocket and placed them under arrest. About 10 minutes later, Conway arrested the peg, Pagan for distribution of heroin and recovered $142 in currency from Pagan's purse. All right. So that's the circumstances. I'm trying not to sound real boring on this. I don't have this actual case law in a two-day course. And the reason is because when you take the two-day course, the people have been through it, I have so much packed in there that I actually have to go in and begin to remove things for time purposes. So I had this stuff in there. I had to take it out because we just can't get through everything. And that's why I offer here in the group. I'm really working on trying to get other programs where I can add more of this stuff in so you guys can have a second, like maybe like a secondary one-day course outside of the one-day case law class that we cover already, that I can help you understand all areas of case law in New Jersey. So let me just continue to read this. The facts in this case, nearly identical to those presented in the Supreme Court case and Moore. where four undercover detectives patrolling a known high crime area in an unmarked car observed a group of approximately six people congregating in a parking lot. It's the same thing. It says here the officer acted in the same manner as detectives and more. After observing what he thought to be a drug transaction, the officer approached the purchaser and informed of what he had witnessed. In the officer's presence, Vasquez removed from his hand and his pocket, and the officer observed two balloons in his right pocket. The minor factual dispute in this case concerning whether the officer could have actually seen the balloon inside the defendant's pocket is of little consequence because the officer already had a well-grounded suspicion sufficient to justify an arrest based on the totality of the circumstances. So here they're saying it again in Pagan. You have enough PC to make an arrest. But again, guys, the factual things that you have to understand is this. You have to have some experience. You have to have seen money being exchanged for a small, doesn't he? You don't have to identify it as a thing, and that will actually establish probable cause to make the arrest. You don't have to stop and hold and ask and question all that bullshit, like literally cuff, cuff. Click. My apologies to everybody who was expecting me to say that. I said cuff, cuff. It's Friday, guys. Coffee, too much coffee. Again, I have to implore you that you have to get this translated to your administrators if they aren't aware of this. Before going out and employing it, you guys should take the stuff that I'm giving you, this information, print it out. You can take it, highlight the areas that I spoke about, and show it to your administration so you can have their support. Okay. And the last one I have here is State of New Jersey versus Pinero. You know, it's interesting to me when I get like people who try to criticize some of this stuff, right? They'll be like, oh, it didn't say that. Listen to me. I'm telling you, the way I translate things are 100% accurate. Some people read this stuff, and a lot of people have told me it's very hard for them to read. They can't understand how to follow these things. Believe it or not, some people are very, very, very easy to understand this stuff, and some people not. And that's okay. Strengths and weaknesses, right? Like, I'm not good at a lot of things. I'm good at coming on fucking Facebook, giving classes, and understanding case law, and giving you guys as much value as I can on a daily basis in these videos. That's all, you know. So that's what I'm here to help you with. But please don't come and misunderstand what these cases say and then try to criticize or be a hypocrite to what the courts actually said. That's all I'm asking. Just if you don't understand it, just ask me. I'll try to translate it as much as possible. Anyway, basically this is what happens. It's Wildwood. This cop says the overhead lights allowed Abood to observe defendant give Rodriguez a pack of cigarettes. Abood was aware there was a cigarette pack sometimes is used to transport drugs. Neither man was smoking at the time. Immediately after the transfer, the two men noticed Abood. Basically, what happens is this cop in Wildwood sees one guy give another guy a cigarette pack. And then he stops them and he searches them. He opens the cigarette pack and he finds the suspected heroin. Three smaller light blue baggies of suspected heroin. And what the court said is this, basically, in a nutshell. Yes, we agree that when you see money being exchanged for a small object, it establishes probable cause to make an arrest for a hand-to-hand drug transaction observed by a person and the totality of circumstances, not only a person, but a person who is qualified and has experience. What happened here was the cop only saw a cigarette pack going from one person to another. And the court said that may have justified investigative detention, but it did not justify PC enough to stop and make the arrest and search that cigarette pack. So what's the difference between the first two I talked to you and the third one we're talking about here is there was no money being seen transacting from one hand to another in exchange for a small object. All it was a cigarette pack going to another cigarette pack, and it was a hunch. And on that hunch, you weren't able to – you could have stopped the main investigative detention. They say that here, but you couldn't stop and begin to search everybody unless there was a reasonable belief that the person was armed and dangerous. Really good cases to read. Hopefully this brings value to everybody. The guy who reached out to me yesterday, who was at the PBA meeting and had this debate with his coworkers, I will put the stuff up here. There's nothing to debate anymore. Hopefully I can clear that up for you guys. I should be back here all weekend. I'll be working. You don't know, I work 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day here at the office, trying to dig up shit for you guys, putting stuff together. Brad Gilmore has been giving the green light for his classes coming up, concealed compartments, traps, interdiction. He's a fucking killer with the Bergen County Interdiction Unit. He's a monster. He's a great cop. He's one of us now. He's a street cop instructor. He's been given the okay from his agency. I know people have been chomping at the bit to ask me when he's coming on board. We are now working on getting his dates scheduled, probably looking at April for the first date for him. So if you have interest, stay tuned. Jesse Hartnett, our other brother here, who is an instructor with the street cop training, His trial just concluded in Philadelphia, where the person who attempted to take his life was found guilty of attempted murder of a police officer. We expect that man is going to rot the rest of his life in jail. Unfortunately, that's not enough justice. He should be thrown off a fucking cliff. But Jesse, as he's working out final details, you know, and the things that he has to do at work, you could expect to see Street Cop putting on and beginning to schedule his classes in the future. Really, really an amazing instructor. Super fucking excited to have him. I really want to thank everybody for watching these videos, supporting the group. And I know a lot of people are getting, it's just amazing to me that everybody's getting so much value out of the stuff that I'm doing. I will continue to do it until something catastrophic happens. But till then, if I can help you with anything, feel free to email me, dennis@streetcoptraining.com. Or if you want a free sticker, streetcopstickers@gmail.com. And if you guys can check out the website, streetcoptraining.com, if you're looking, Black is Right, and they want the challenge coins, you can buy them. We'll ship them out to you. I can't give away hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth. I mean, like in the past 2 weeks, we gave out over $1,000 of stuff. No bullshit, at my cost. Over $1,000. We gave like $790 worth of t-shirts, and another $600 worth of challenge coins went out. And that's at my cost. We don't make a lot of bread on it, but you got to understand that we have people here who are employed. We have a full-time videographer. We have a graphic designer. I have an admin and an assistant. And all those people have to get paid. So there has to be some buffer, because it takes a lot of time to order the stuff, package it, go to the post office, send it out. So that's why we have to have a little room on it. Nobody's trying to take advantage of anybody. The t-shirt qualities are, you can see people have testified and written in that they're very good. But anyway, guys, if you need anything from me, reach out anytime. Peace.